Fellow Freedom fans, that was a good question posed by our last caller. Very good stuff. I'm going to have to, and the thing is now I'm obligated to look it up, and we'll have to do a show on it. Yeah, well, I'm going to get back to finish my article here called Hassan Chop. Lieutenant, here we go. My caller was asking and making a comment about the president's urging Congress to hold off any investigation. Now, I would not tell them to hold off an investigation. It's appropriate, I think, to say, hey, resist the temptation to turn this tragic event into a political theater, but to hold off any investigation. Now that I'm looking at the statement, I would agree with my caller. Well, that's certainly irresponsible. I think it's political if that's what you think. Would I tell Congress to hold off any investigation? No way. I mean, it's their job. I mean, they have to, according to the Constitution, to make rules for the government regulation of land and naval forces. If there's a crack in the hull, it's got to be caulked, right? But I don't think it should be a major portion of what Congress ought to be doing. There's committees for that. They've got staff members, and they've got powers of subpoena and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So let me couch what I said to that caller based on what I'm reading out of this article. I wouldn't hold off an investigation. And, of course, having a president of the United States resist exposing certain things or turning people over to Congress, that's his prerogative, depending on how it will be intruding or interrupting with normal operations and whether or not it will be usurping, or I would say, yeah, usurping, the role of the inspector general and all those who are in those executive agencies who are professionals at doing some of this stuff. But I will tell you that sometimes they can professionally cover things up. I have seen that with my very own eyes. And that's why they would give me days off sometimes while I was in the Navy. You know what? You can get a day off in the Navy for doing the right thing. And what it is when they know you're going to do the right thing, they may have you take a day off so that you're not around when the investigator comes in. I have little anecdotes about that. Lieutenant Colonel Richard Spiegel, an Army spokesman, would not confirm the Army probe, but told the Journal, "We're going to take a hard look at ourselves." Now, this is appropriate. Lieutenant Colonel Richard Spiegel, he's an Army spokesman. He can say this. He said, "We're going to take a hard look at ourselves and the non-criminal aspects of this case. That means, are there any cracks in our hull? What are the things that we have to do? Is there a procedure, a pre-plan?" This is what the military does, so we don't get confused during the fog of war. They say, what should be the pre-planned response to a warning that, you know, when you see somebody at specific types, you know, there's certain guys, let's say it's a Christian guy, he gets all excited, all of a sudden he starts to get conscientious objection about killing people at all. Now, he's not a danger to the military unless you put him on the fire in a firefight situation. I mean, at that point, he may be a risk to the person standing next to him. The worst thing you can do, and I've seen, it's like on a volleyball court. I'll just give you an anecdotal. You'd rather have somebody who's not going to play not be there, or on a soccer field. You'd rather have somebody who's not going to play not be there, because in your peripheral vision, you see them there and you think that spot's covered. But suddenly, they're not really doing their job. Same thing in a firefight. You'd rather have them not there because then it doesn't set you up. You see in your peripheral vision, there's one of your buddies on the firing line there, right? But he's not really doing his job. That sets you up for some dangerous situation. So let's just say, so it depends on what the situation is. Now, if it's somebody who has a Mohammedan, where he's taught certain things about how to deal with everybody who is not a Mohammedan, and which including killing those who are not Mohammedans, then I think you better cock your hull. Months before last week's shooting, doctors and staff overseeing Hassan's training reported viewing him at times as belligerent, defensive, argumentative in his frequent discussions of his Muslim faith, according to a military official familiar with several group discussions about Hassan. And I will tell you, I've read the religious accommodation religious views in the military. I've not read all the Army documents, but I've read the Secretary of the Army's instructions with regard to religious accommodations and stuff. And they hold that religious faith and training and background and history for American protection is highly, extremely important. That's why you have a military, to protect people, to operate in religion freely without being abused by foes, foreign or domestic. You know, the civilian guys are supposed to protect us domestically. But that's a very important aspect in America. You do have to, though. I would not check out your brain at the door. And one of the guys we had on the show, Chris Seipel, from the, I can't even think of the organization. It'll hit me later. But his idea was that the best counterterrorism mechanism was freedom for religion. I mean, religious freedom. He thought it was a great counterterrorist work because, you know, that he just thought that was important. But he said, when we interviewed him here, he said a major problem that we have in our government is we're not investigating the religious aspects of the beliefs and doctrines to figure out how you're supposed to act in that environment. What happens is they say separation of church and state, so they're not willing to go open up the Quran and say, okay, what does this book say? What do guys who believe this think? Well, some of them don't read part of it, just like some people don't read certain parts of the Bible. But some do read certain parts, and you better figure out which part the guy's really hooking onto that is his hope for eternal salvation. Some people who read the Quran get these parts that are the jihad part, where he thinks, you know, he's going to win rewards in heaven for killing people. The Al-Qaeda viewpoint would go with that. The Al-Qaeda viewpoint would go, well, we're not supposed to kill Muslims, but if one of them gets killed while I'm killing an infidel, then they get a free ride to heaven. I mean, you know, that's the Al-Qaeda viewpoint. That's how they can justify blowing up not only the infidel, but everybody and their brother in the neighborhood. So you better find out what these guys think, what they're reading. If he's talking to some cleric in Yemen, remember the place that the coal got bombed? You had better pay attention to what's going on. And in fact, there's a difference. If you get two Christians in an office, you may have one who's spending his time during working hours telling everybody they're corrupt, vicious, and degenerate. And then you've got other ones who say, well, you know, everybody knows they're corrupt, vicious, and degenerate, and I'm going to be an example of light and love in their midst. Different approach. Okay? You better know what people's backgrounds are, what, you know, and what causes them to be a danger or whatever. So there's a little commentary on that, not just going, well, it's religious. Let's just not talk about it. Let's tolerate it. Let's have it happen during Sunday morning services on the ship, but let's not really pay attention to it. I had it's 20 years ago, a chaplain talked to me, and he was so upset that there was a particular chaplain coming on board, and he said, do you know what he believes? And he opens up this book, and what the guy believed was exactly what the military is set up to fight against. Oh, my goodness, that was scary. And he said, they're going to make this guy a chaplain. What are they thinking? Are they not reading? Yeah, no, they're not reading that stuff. Okay, so I'm going to go on another thing. Our number here is 888-850-1872. I'm going to get to something else. I want to bring something up. Don't repeat everything you hear. I could on this show say a bunch of things that some people say, oh, that's kooky. That's just stupid. I'm not going to listen to this guy anymore. And some people go, oh, I love that. I love repeating these goofy statements. Well, I don't want to do that. What I'd like to do, it may sound goofy to you. It may sound, some of the things we say may sound conspiracy theorist or something like that. But there are things going on. But the goal is to actually see it factually and not make conjecture or just, you know, connect dots that aren't really there. Yeah. Let's look at the facts. I think if we can communicate some facts, I think I get away with doing a little editorial commentary. You're going to get my views on it. And sometimes I give my views. And actually, I give things that aren't my view just to stir up calls at 888-850-1872 just to prompt you. If you're upset at what I say, don't turn it off. Give me a call. Give me feedback. This is my fairness doctrine. A 90-year-old ex-member of Nazi SS charged with 58 counts of murder. a 90-year-old former member of the Nazi SS. That's National Socialist Party. It's a socialist who is nationalizing socialism. That's what Nazi was. 90-year-old former member of the Nazi SS has been charged with 58 counts of murder for, watch this, some people will just turn me off right now when I say this, because they've had something said to them that had no substance. For the murder of 1945 killings of Jewish forced laborers in Austria, authorities said Tuesday. Some of you have been told the same thing that Ahmadinejad is saying, that the Holocaust is just a fake political propaganda thing. Somebody tells you that, and you're going to repeat it. Area 51 or whatever, I don't know. Somebody's going to say something to you, and without you investigating anything, you're going to repeat it. The only investigation I've seen is just anecdotal, the same thing everybody's been exposed to. The films, have you ever seen the film of when the U.S. military went and found one of these camps? And they filmed having the local people of the town, they were so incensed at what they found when the U.S. military showed up that they went and gathered the people and the town surrounding this camp, and they made the women and the men come and pick up the hundreds of bodies laying around and carry them to a mass grave. They were so incensed. They were like, we know who's going to fix this, who's going to clean up this mess. It's these people who allowed this to happen on their land. Have you seen that stuff? I read a book based on an interview of the guy who was the commandant of Treblinka, where they killed literally thousands of people a day. Thousands of people today. A day. And some would say they've heard, that's fake. Okay. If somebody told you that, can you just do the research yourself? Connect the dots. On March 29, 1945, the accused and his accomplices brought at least 57 Jewish forced laborers and several groups to a nearby forest area where they had to give up their valuables and kneel by a grave. The accused and other SS members then cruelly shot the Jewish forced laborers from behind. And this is March 29, 1945. Adolf Storms, a former member of the 5th Panzer Division, Viking. The day following the massacre, he was accused of personally shooting another Jew who could no longer walk during a forced march in Austria from Deutschschützen to village of Hartberg. Prosecutor Andreas Brendel said his investigation is still ongoing, but so far, three former members of Hitler Youth who were helping the SS oversee the march have provided witness statements in Austria. A fourth former Hitler Youth member now living in Canada is being interviewed. There are two who witnessed the shooting of the individual Jewish victim, but there are no people alive who are part of the other shootings. There are statements made during an Austrian trial of others involved that can be used as evidence against the suspect, he said. Now, the tricky part is you don't have cross-examination. That's a little bit difficult. Okay, that's it. Oh, the suspect was interned in an American prisoner of war camp following the war, but was released in 1946 in the chaotic aftermath of the war. However, it was not uncommon for possible criminals to slip through the cracks. In fact, the commandant of Treblinka literally walked out of the camp. It was almost like a halfway house, almost. Very, very light security. Very light security. It was actually kind of a place for folks to live that were soldiers. And he just wandered out and found himself in Argentina. Ended up being one of the head guys in a manufacturing plant for Volkswagen. Hey, we're going to come back here, and we're going to talk about some of these things on a constitutional basis, biblical basis, the basis of right versus wrong. Give us a call, 888-850-1872. Check us out online at faithfreedoms.org and the Frank Talk Radio's talk104.com. We'll return.